Sluts and Scholars, a podcast for professionals who prioritize pleasure.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Sluts and Scholars is a podcast produced by Sluts and Scholars Media, LLC. It is a shame-free educational podcast made for your entertainment and informational desires only. The podcast, any opinions we share, and any resources, including social media and emails from us, are not therapy, medical care, or professional advice, and do not create a patient-client relationship. None of the information, opinions, suggestions, resources, or exercises mentioned in this podcast should be used without clearance from your healthcare provider. All opinions, information, and ideas expressed by the guests are solely their own. If you need emergency mental health or medical help, please call 911 or 988 or go to your nearest emergency center. We hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back to another week of Sluts and Scholars, the podcast for professionals who prioritize pleasure. I'm Nicoletta Heidegger, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and sexologist. And this week, I'm excited to welcome fellow podcaster, Sarah Tomchesson. She, her. She advocates for sexual liberation through her work as a sex educator, sex toy evangelist, and podcast host. Sarah has spent much of her career shaping legendary sex toy brands, including Pleasure Chest, Babeland, and Love Honey. Currently, she holds the position of Director of Marketing for the iconic Magic Wand brand. She firmly believes in the power of pleasure as a healing tool, as you all know that I do. She is a certified sexuality educator and has been developing, programming, and presenting pleasure-based sex ed nationwide since 2007. She co-hosts an awesome feminist podcast called Fuck Yeah, which aims to disrupt harmful ideas about sexuality, intimate relationships, identity, parenthood, and more. She's also a proud mama to a vivacious 8-year-old and honored to sit on a very cool board of directors for SECIS, Sex Ed for Social Change, which is the nation's leading sex education policy nonprofit. Welcome, very accomplished Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, listeners, so we are doing things a little bit differently. As you know, I have started to do Q&As. You have asked for a long time, and now we are finally doing them. And so Sarah and I are going to tackle one of your questions and hopefully give you some answers. Are you down, Sarah?
I'm so down. Let's do it.
Okay, so first up, we have a question from our audience. It will be anonymous. And this person said, "Hi, I'm a 57-year-old married man. My wife is 56. We have been married going on 30 years and have never had what you would call a sex life. My wife, whom I love very much, dropped a bombshell on me within the past month that she has no interest in sex, kissing, or any type of physical contact. My wife has never had an orgasm in her life. I've been listening to your podcast, and I figured I would ask if you have any advice for us. We've been to doctors and counselors to no avail. Please help."
Wow, that's a lot.
Firstly, thank you for sharing this. I'm going to share some of my stuff, and then Sarah, I'd love to hear what your expert brain thinks about this. But firstly, thank you for asking this. You are definitely not the only person experiencing this. I see a lot of folks in my private practice who are experiencing this. First thing that comes to mind, you are describing an age range where people go through perimenopause and menopause. So there is a high likelihood possibility that hormones could be shifting things. And so when you say that you guys have been to doctors and therapists or counselors, I want to make sure and invite you to make sure that those folks are sex therapists or sex informed or sex medicine specialists. There are many wonderful doctors and therapists out there, but if they don't have training about some of the specifics, you may not be getting what you want. You also said you've been married for 30 years. So a lot of times after that long, there is some staleness, but you said you've never had what we would call a sex life. And so there are so many things physically, psychologically, orientation-wise, medically that can cause folks to be struggling with sexuality. And so one thing that you mentioned is that she has never had an orgasm. So most people don't want to have sex that they're not enjoying if there's not pleasure. And so I'm curious if there's been pain for her. That's a big reason people don't want to have it. If she's not having sex worth having, which may or may not include an orgasm, she may not want to be having it. Sarah, feel free to chime in on any of this, but I got more. I could keep going.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things that come to mind for me is that we do live, I mean, there's asexuality is a sexuality that doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And if you haven't ever had a meaningful, regular sex life, it is entirely possible that your partner is asexual. And that doesn't mean that she doesn't experience other forms of attraction to you, but it may not cross into that realm of really wanting to engage sexually. So like those are important conversations to have, and maybe actually finding a professional who has some specialty in the asexuality or like gray sexuality spectrum could be helpful. And I think that then you know kind of what you're dealing with, and it's a matter of negotiating and figuring out, like, if you have sexual needs and your partner is not interested in fulfilling them, perhaps there's ways that you can find fulfillment in a polyamorous relationship or some other, you know, relationship structure. And then, I mean, just piggybacking on something that you said, and we talked about it at the start, like I have the come together, the art and science of creating lasting relationships, the new book by Emily Nagoski. And it's just so fantastic in terms of permission giving around so many different ways to experience pleasure that each couple can really negotiate and figure out for themselves. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that pleasure has to be coming from, you know, what we stereotypically think of as like, you know, married sex, right?
Right.
So I think expanding the resources, getting a little bit more expansive with that might be really helpful for you too.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned the asexuality spectrum thing. And if you're curious more about asexuality, we have a podcast episode about that. So I'll put it in the show notes, but go back and check that one out. Whenever I have someone coming into my office who says that there's like little desire, I want to address like a couple different things. First, I'll usually try to rule out something physical. So whether that's pain, whether that's a hormone thing, whether that's something to do with the tissue that's preventing the person from like feeling sensation, whether that's medication they're taking, whether there's been physical trauma to the area, we want to rule that in or out to see if that's impacting something. Then we go to kind of the psychological, and then we go to the sociocultural. So this is a good thing. The psychological could be anything from shame around pleasure. It could also be just the way a person's desire and arousal patterns work. So I'll put in the show notes, but go back to some episodes that talk about responsive desire or erotic blueprints, because a lot of us have different ways that our desire and arousal show up. And sometimes as partners, we approach our partner the way we want to be approached, and it just doesn't work for them. And over time, it becomes sex that doesn't feel fulfilling for that person. So definitely find a sex therapist. I'll put a link in the show notes. Remember, we're not your therapist or coaches, but hopefully this is giving you some educational points to start off with. And yeah, thank you for writing. Anything you want to add to it, Sarah?
No, that was that. I think that's a good place to start for this couple.
Yeah. And then I think you also have to, last thing I would say, you also have to ask your partner, does she want to work on this with you? I hear that you want to work on it. Obviously, you're reaching out and having some of these conversations with her. I think a lot of folks think that when they don't have the desire or whatever, that they don't want it. So the next question I ask is like, well, do you want it? And even for asexual people, I'm like, do you want some kind of intimacy? And what does that look like for you? Because there's a spectrum there, and they may not want sex in the traditional way, but they may enjoy other pleasures. They may actually physically enjoy sex, but not desire it. There's a whole way that that can work. And so does she want to work on this with you and continue working on it? Because there are lots of other answers. Something you can read together as a couple is, a book by Emily Nagoski, Come Together, or a book by another past guest, Cindy Darnell, called Sex When You Don't Feel Like It. Yeah, that was everything I could manage in a few in minutes. Thank you so much for writing in, and feel free to follow up and let us know how that goes at slutsandscholars.com. Sarah, now let's focus on you.
Okay.
Okay. So you are now working with Magic Wand. So for folks who somehow don't know what the Magic Wand is, what is it?
Yes. I mean, I was holding back from doing the shameless Magic Wand plug when there was mention of the the person who wrote in his wife never having an orgasm, because the Magic
Wand... Have you tried this?
Like, have you tried the Magic Wand? So the Magic Wand was came out on May 20th, 1968. So like, imagine this time period, right? Like, this is really at the, just like the precipice of the sexual revolution. It was released by Hitachi as a personal body massager. Quickly, people realized that these signature powerful rumbly vibrations, because of the clitoral network, when you use this product on the vulva, it just gets vibrations so deep into all of that, like erectile tissue, and create this sort of like surround sound vibration.
Yeah.
For the body. You can use it all over the body, but specifically on the genitals, it is very powerful and very orgasmic for a lot of folks. So the original Magic Wand is like a good old fashioned, like, plug-in massager. And there are now new styles that are rechargeable. And most recently we came out with the Micro, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it is this tiny little cute 4-inch massage wand. And we think of it as like the Magic Wand for Gen Z, because it's just so dang cute. And actually for me, it's like the perfect type of vibration that I need as someone who's always used kind of like, you know, small external massage stones. I don't necessarily need the power of the full size wand, although it has really built a cult following over the years. And the Micro is just like, it's finally the
it's
wand.
It's so cute, and it fits perfectly in your hand.
Yeah. It's like great for travel. It comes with like a little wrist strap, so you can like put it on your purse or accessorize with it. It's really cute.
Just wear it as a fabulous necklace.
Yes. Yeah. We have gotten, you know, I mean, there's a number of folks out there that are like showing off their wands with their outfits, which is really cute.
I mean, do you think Hitachi knew that like people were using it to masturbate and they were just calling it a personal massager, or was it just like they really didn't know?
Yeah, it's actually kind of an interesting part of the history, because they are, you know, this is... personal massagers are not really what they manufacture, right?
And yeah, they do like equipment and like tractors, yeah, and stuff, right?
Yep. Equipment, home goods. They have FDA approved devices. The Magic Wand is actually FDA approved.
Oh.
And at a certain point in their history, they considered discontinuing the manufacture of the Magic Wand, because they just realized, oh my gosh, this is not our wheelhouse at all. And that's where Vibratex came in. So Vibratex is the company that distributes the Magic Wand, and we do all of the branding and marketing for the Magic Wand. And Shay Martin, who's our current owner, her mom started the company and is the inventor of the Rabbit. And once they made the partnership with Vibratex, they realized, okay, we can continue producing this product, because now it is in the hands of folks who actually know what to do with it and how to market it. And so Vibratex has been the exclusive distributor of the Magic Wand for decades now.
And what are some of the folks that you think prefer the rumbly sensation? Because like you said, for a lot of people, they love this, right? It can be, yeah, very intense. It can be very deep. For some people, that's too intense, which you can try the smaller one or other sensations. But what kind of folks do you see really enjoying the rumbly?
Yeah. I mean, I would say having sold sex toys now for a really long time on the Rumble to Buzz scale, generally speaking, people like a Rumble better than a Buzz because buzzy, high-pitched vibrations can kind of numb you out more quickly. Now, I'm not suggesting that you can get addicted to vibrators or get desensitized by them, but like in a session of play, for instance, you can reach sort of a point where you're like, I can't really take much more stimulation.
Yeah. And we should talk about the research around why people think that you can get numbed out from a vibrator, but continue your thing and we'll sure. put it on the shelf.
Yes. Yes.
Brain is going lots of places.
Yeah. So a lot of folks that you hear being really big enthusiasts around the magic wand are folks who either can't orgasm any other way, mm-hmm. who like high intensity stimulation.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of kink applications of the magic wand. You can do lots of orgasm control and those sorts of things with the magic wand. But really, I would say that the way that a wand in general covers a lot of surface area. So it's like anybody who really likes that kind of full vulva stimulation is going to really enjoy the stimulation of the wand because the surface area that it covers and then the depth that the vibration penetrates into just creates this kind of unmatched sensation that you really just can't get from really anything else.
Yeah. And since you worked with a bunch of like toy companies and stores and things like that, I imagine so many people would come in and be like, how do I know what I like? Right. Mm-hmm. Well, what are some tips you have for like folks who are trying to figure out like buzzy versus, this more like vibrate-y, rumbly thing? Like how do people even start?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. So one thing to always think about is like, what have you enjoyed before? Right. So whether that is internal stimulation or like, you're a clit smasher, like you really got to kind of break down, like, are you a humper? Like, are you someone who that is where you really get the best kind of stimulation? Do you need, if you're going to experience penetration, do you find that you're like really grinding against your partner's body to get that kind of like deep clitoral stimulation? So all of that can give you good information in terms of what direction to go when looking for a product. Generally speaking, I would say that if you're just starting out, you should always find a product that can be used in a few different ways. Mm. So wands are a great example of this because of the surface area that they cover. You can really warm the whole body up with them. You can lightly massage the area, or you can be like really deeply pressing them into the body so it can kind of go on that full journey with you. And you also want to look for things that have a range on them, because for a lot of folks, maybe the really highest setting on, say, the magic wand is really not going to be a setting that you use very often. But knowing that you have it there, if you've reached like a really high level of arousal, because over time, what happens is we actually can kind of take more stimulation as the whole area becomes engorged with blood, becomes more responsive to stimuli. So you really want a toy, especially if it's a motorized toy, that can go on that like full journey with you. So like, one speed vibrators, like we've all had our like first pocket rocket and like, bless it for introducing us right to vibration, but it's not what I would recommend if you're really looking for something that you can create a layered sensory experience with.
Yeah. And, for folks who don't know what they like yet, like it is an investment. And I mean, a financial investment, a money investment, a time investment. The investment is worth it, in my opinion. You have to decide if it's worth it for you, but just like you invest to see what kind of food you might like or what kind of like styles of clothes you might like, it's, you have to decide that pleasure is important to you. And so it may be an investment. You may need to buy one of each kind of thing and practice with each of them for a while to see what you like. I have a lot of clients who will like get a toy, try it once and be like, it didn't work. And yeah. with some things like the magic wand, maybe immediately people are like, love it. But other times we have to give ourselves time to actually settle into the sensation of something new, just like any new behavior change. So I really invite people to like allow themselves time to actually sensitize to something new. So like try it, but try it again and again for a bit of time to see what you like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of when I teach like sex tip focused classes, one of the things that folks want to talk about all the time is like urethral sponge stimulation. So the G-spot and the prostate. And it's like, guess what, y'all? The first time you stimulate your urethral sponge, it is possibly going to feel almost a little uncomfortable because all of the sensations that you've really associated with this part of your body, like it might give you a like, I have to pee sensation. It might feel kind of intense. And over time, that sensation can become eroticized for you.
Yes.
But I love you mentioning that like time is an investment that you make in your sexuality, because like really what I have found is that people sometimes go to toys to fix a problem. Mm. And toys actually aren't a quick fix, right?
It's because not actually magic. Are you telling me that?
Magic when you're ready for it, right?
Like, yeah. You've
got to really like map your own pleasure map in your body. You've got to take the time to invest in really understanding like what your kind of erotic language is that you speak. And I think toys can be a great way to do that exploration. But it's not just like, okay, you turn the button on and then all of a sudden all of your like,
you're overcome literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And time to figure out how your body wants to use it. Like shout out to the rest in peace, esteemed Betty Dodson, who loves the magic wand. If you're interested in that kind of work, they do in-person and virtual experiences called Body Sex, which Betty Dodson created in the 60s, I think, and kept going until her passing into her 90s. But her partner, Carlin, and other folks lead these experiences, and they kind of talk about how with the magic wand, they like to like rock towards it and have it on their bodies and then rock away from it and have it off. So this sort of like tease, push-pull sensation. So like, figure out what your body likes. Like you said, you might like it right on there hard the whole time. You might like an hour warm up on the rest of your body. So it might take you some time.
Yeah. I love her signature kind of move.
Rock and roll method, yeah. I think.
Yes. Developed with the wand, because it also like, you know, I think we can do this thing where we get really localized with our orgasms. Like it's like, you know, clit, 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 or head of the penis. And like, maybe we're going to throw a little nipple action in there and then hope that we have this explosive orgasm. And so, you know, folks, and certainly, you know, there's plenty of stories out there, people using the magic wand and they've like gotten off in 30 seconds, right? But this like rocking that Betty taught with the wand, like activates those like hip movements. It gets your whole body engaged.
Yeah. Yes, so you're not just kind of passively receiving the vibration. You're actually engaging all these muscles, all these nerve endings, moving energy, moving breath, moving other parts that feel good.
Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a full body experience and you're present and you're feeling all of the sensations and you're moving erotic energy through the body. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a time commitment, right? To figure out how your body likes to move, how it likes to be touched.
Yeah. And just going back to our question asker from earlier too, if you are someone who has not experienced an orgasm yet, or you're not sure if you've experienced one, the good news is you don't have to learn how to do it by yourself. So I know we're talking about some of these techniques, but if you're like, well, how do I start? Where do I start? What do I do? There are classes for that. Okay, so I want to circle back to people who believe that vibrators can ruin them. Mm-hmm. So I actually learned recently, I was at a conference called ISWISH, which is the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, I think. And one of my colleagues, a researcher named Dr. Nicole Prouse, was talking about the study that actually was cited. I'm going to put this in the show notes, so hopefully I'm not misquoting it. But I believe she said that the study that was cited about people who can get damage from their vibrator was actually done on construction workers and the vibration that they were experiencing from construction tools. Did you know that?
I did not know this.
Yeah. So the studies that say that there can be effects of intense vibration wasn't even done on sex toys and tools. It was like intense, like, you know, like construction work folks and they're on their hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a totally different part of the body than your genitals, just saying.
This is just the amazing thing. I mean, you know, the recent study that came out like a year and a half ago, actually looking at a human clitoris for the first time.
But yeah, because we thought that the numbers were cows.
Yes, we were using like the numbers from like bovine studies. And it's just like, it speaks to just how light the research is actually around sexuality. And I mean, we're just really afraid of genitals. It's unfortunate.
Well, I think it also speaks to the unfortunate thing that it's not like we're taught, you know, unless you're going to school to become a researcher, we're not necessarily taught how to look at news articles and research articles with a discerning eye. And so we get, you know, if you're a layperson, you get kind of the summary of it. And depending on what the news outlet is, you may get an incorrect summary or an incomplete summary that doesn't talk about the limitations. And then you globalize this narrative or this belief about humanity when it might not be 100% objective.
You know, there's a great example of this recently. Did you see the, like all the Instagrams and TikToks about the gay whales?
No, but I need to hear more because I have officiated a gay horse wedding before. So,
okay, well, I'm going to need to hear about the horse wedding.
Yeah, let me hear about the gay whales.
So the first documentation of humpbacks engaging in sex, like actual penetration.
Okay.
Recently off the coast of Hawaii, and it was between two males.
Yeah.
And people are like so excited. They're like, yes, the gay whales. This is so awesome. More representations of like homosexuality in nature. And so I was like, oh, I want to look into this because we have a segment on the Fuck Yeah podcast. We talk about queer animals a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And like have a little bit of a hyena obsession happening. And so
what is it about hyenas?
Oh man, they are total matriarchs. They're such feminists. A hyena vagina is a long penis that gets penetrated and you cannot tell the difference between a female and a male hyena unless you actually feel the balls. Like female hyenas have like faux testicles because they are the dominant species. I mean, they're the dominant, they're matriarchs. They run the society and like the vagina is like this tubular kind of penis like structure. It's also the vaginal canal. So like hyena birth is a goddamn miracle because they like the longest birthing canals and just really interesting social behavior. Ooh,
okay. I'm going to have an episode about hyena sex now.
But anyway, so I'm very excited gay whales. about the gay whales, right? And so I started looking into it and then I read more about the behavior. And yes, it is very interesting. And there is some information that they can glean about mating practices because usually it's so deep in the ocean that we don't get to
observe. Deep.
Yes. But what was actually happening is that one of those whales was dying and it was a dominant male whale coming and actually being aggressive towards the other whale to demonstrate dominance. And it was not in any way a, you know, it's not that this isn't a reality. Like that's part of sex, right?
I mean, I was about to say, what I'm hearing is that you're kink shaming the whales.
This is a very valid reason.
Like, this is how I wanted to die, lady.
Happened, you know what I mean? But it wasn't this like amorous, these two whales were not like, you know, bonded together. And so, yes, it is a demonstration of gay sex in the wild for one of the reasons that sex happens, which is domination, right?
Yeah. So we don't know if they liked the domination or not.
We have no information about that. So it wasn't, you know, bottlenose dolphins.
Bottlenose.
Who partner for life with other male dolphins.
Yeah, there's a lot of queerness in the animal kingdom.
There is.
Thank you for sharing about the gay dolphins. But yes, I mean, highlighting that people can kind of jump on a thing and project their own stuff or get excited about it. But I'll look for this research to put in the show notes. You guys can take a look for yourself. But and again, I don't want to misquote her, but I think what I also can remember from that study that she was talking about is that most of the potential like injury, quote unquote, that could happen physically from vibration was temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about people who get, quote unquote, addicted to their vibrators, I would never use that word. It's more like, yes, we can get sensitized by something that we utilize all the time, but most of the time it is temporary. And it may be our most reliable route to pleasure or orgasm. And there's nothing wrong with having a most reliable route. And if you're like, well, I'd really like to try other things, you may need to give yourself some time to kind of desensitize and resensitize to a new sensation. But that doesn't mean that you're like addicted to it or that it has harmed you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this speaks to the ways in which like our brain plays a huge role in sex, right?
Absolutely.
Like, is not just the stimulation of nerve endings in a specific way. So can you get habituated to a certain setting in a certain position, in the same spot in your house at the same time of day?
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you are not flexing those, you know, erotic muscles, so to speak, in a variety of different ways, you can certainly start to create a context in the brain where this plus this equals orgasm. And you may not have as much orgasmic versatility until you try some new things. So I always say, if you are concerned that you're using your vibrator in a particular way and that it is contributing to you not being able to have orgasms in other ways, just start making subtle adjustments. Try it in a different position. You know, put the lights on. Engage in some audio erotica, like just something that changes the context up a little bit and helps to give you that versatility.
Yeah. And it's kind of like doing anything over and over, right? Like there are some studies I think that do show that like some vibrator use can like decrease sensitivity temporarily, but it's like anything, like if you're using a massager on the rest of your body, or if you're like doing the same thing in any part of your life, like you said, over and over, like, of course it's going to feel habituated, but that doesn't mean we can't make shifts.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, all of this makes me just think about like how we get the word out about things. And so you are in marketing. Like, how have you marketed pleasure tools given our culture that silences a lot of marketing on these kinds of things?
It's so exhausting. And I feel like it's really getting worse.
I hope you get paid like an exhaustion tax, because it's like, this is like a much harder thing to market than like any other thing.
Yes. It's so frustrating because you can use sex to market anything, but you cannot market anything that is actually used pleasurable for sex, right? And it's even worse when you're talking specifically about quote unquote female pleasure. So I think it was Unbound who did a test recently, and you know, doing social media ads is virtually impossible.
And for folks don't know, who's Unbound?
Unbound is a, they make products. They also have a website. They're a women-owned pleasure products company. And so they made a whole round of ads for a fake masturbator for men. Mm-hmm. And it's all like weightlifting and virility and like, we're so tough. And this product is going to make your dick hard. Ads went through no problem. And then they made advertisements for a vibrator with just like some really neutral language, like light colors, no mention of sex or pleasure or any of that. And the ads are rejected, right? So we have to understand that there is such a double standard in terms of who is allowed to have sexual pleasure as far as these like large corporations are concerned, right? Yeah. So it's, you know, getting the message through around sex toys really is a grassroots effort. I mean, with Magic Wand, it's a dream because there's been such a love for the product for decades. So, you know, we get to amplify fan art and creators who are incorporating Magic Wand into their work and, you know, show a lot of gratitude towards the community that has built the awareness around the product for a long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're out there, I mean, I'm a sex educator and I have a platform called Sex Plus that I do education through. Mm-hmm. We just struggle constantly. You know, we're caught up in email spam filters. We are, you know, shadow banned on Instagram. We had one account taken down. So one of the things you can do if you're a supporter of sexuality content, you can change your content filter within your social media app to allow content. I mean, it's a little bit of like scary language that's on there. It makes it feel like you're going to suddenly get inundated with like, you know, dick pics constantly, but really like those are the filters that are keeping sexuality creators from you from seeing their content. And
do they just kind of like auto set these filters and then you have to manually change them?
Yes. I want to cite this correctly. So I'm actually going to like jump into my Instagram.
Oh yeah, do it. I want people to know so they can reset their filters to make sure they are getting Sluts and Scholars. Yeah. Or like add to your favorites or whatever so that it's coming up in your feed.
And it's actually like one of the reasons I love podcasting and podcast media in general. It's one of the few media spaces that is not heavily censored.
Yeah.
So support podcasts, y'all. Okay.
Yes. Make sure you follow us there and subscribe there and get added to our newsletters. So if we lose our social media, you know where to find us.
So if you go into, wait, this is.
Okay. If you're not driving, everybody pull out your phones.
Okay. You go to your settings and activity, which is just that little hamburger menu at the top of your Instagram.
Okay.
And you scroll down to, did I just, content preferences. So it's under a category called what you see.
Okay.
And there is there something called sensitive content. It's defaulted to standard, which I am letting you know that that is a, the standard setting is banning a lot of pleasure content.
Yeah.
So then you can do less. So say, I don't know, you've got like a teenager and you don't want them to see anything. You can select less, but you can also select more. And they give you a whole bunch of warnings about it. And then you hit continue. And that is how you turn that filter off.
Oh, everybody do it. Do it now. Pull your car over and do it now.
Yeah.
Okay. So
you know, censorship standards, I think, are something for all of us to care about, you know, regardless of whether you're in the sexuality space or not, because the folks who set those standards really may not align with like how you see the world. It is a pretty puritanical approach that social media platforms apply to you know, the content that they're letting you see. And intentionally don't create child versions of their platforms, because guess what? You can't advertise to kids. So this problem would absolutely be solved if there was like an under 18 version of a social media platform where kids could go and not be advertised to, not receive certain, only like receive content that's appropriate for age. Yeah.
But like people are advertising to kids all the time.
Yep. Yeah.
Oy. Well, I'm glad that it's been easier with something like Magic Wand, but we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for summing that up so beautifully.
I mean, I'm curious because you mentioned in your bio that pleasure is really a healing tool. And I say this on so many of my shows. If you listen to my podcast, you're probably tired of hearing me say it, though I hope not. How do you feel like, what stories have you heard either for yourself or for like clients or users of the Magic Wand, how it's been healing for them?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing about pleasure, and this isn't even just orgasms.
Yeah.
This is like finding ways to notice and experience joy in your body, right? Like that can be from the sound of a loved one laughing, right? It creates a healthy, or I'm not going to use the word healthy, actually. I don't like that word. It creates positive relationship. It develops your reward pathway. So we know that when we are like existing in a regulated system within our bodies, and we are not totally peaking out all the time, right? Like I love those peak experiences, but where you're able to also notice the simple pleasures of life, like you get a boost in confidence. There's a positive benefits for your immune system. You develop a sense of like strength and empowerment. This is a tool that is like accessing pleasure is totally free, right? There are ways that you can exist in the world that is so complicated and challenging these days. So like for myself, I know that in my younger years, like I did a lot of pleasure seeking through things like drugs and parties and sex. And that it was fun. It was great, right? I loved it. But I have a really different pleasure practices these days, you know, like a 6-minute meditation to start the day off, like
adulthood,
a midday orgasm when, I mean, I do work from home, right? So like when like I'm feeling burnt out or like that, like taking a moment to notice that delicious first sip of coffee in the morning. Like these are things that actually make me feel resourced and able to go about life these days, because there is so much, we are inundated with bad news and like living in a content, like we are absorbing way more than we're kind of meant to. So I think like sex, orgasms, but even just like really simple pleasures
are
a way that we can stay like grounded in ourselves in a world that really isn't designed for us to experience peace.
Yeah. And this makes me think of the original Q&A question too, of just like, even if orgasm isn't happening, like how comfortable do you and your partner feel actually engaging in pleasure and allowing pleasure in? You know, I've talked about this on the show before, but some of us have barriers to being able to receive feeling good, whether that be due to trauma or not feeling deserving of it or feeling ashamed that we like it or being taught that we're only supposed to have pleasure when we finish all of our work. You know, there's so many reasons people have what we call a low positive affect tolerance or a low nourishment barrier to receive these pleasurable things. So it can be healing, but a lot of people don't give themselves permission to have that stuff. And so that could be another piece too, is just like how much pleasure is in y'all's life in other ways beyond, you know, the orgasm and the sex. Is that something that you make time for? Do you make time for pleasure? Do you make time for leisure? Is there permission for that?
You know, something you asked, like what clients say about this, and something that I come up against a lot with folks when talking about pleasure and really trying to deconstruct it, like who modeled pleasure for you?
If anybody
really qualified to role model pleasure, right? Like, so when we look at our early lessons around it, a lot of us have these things of like, it has to be earned. Mm-hmm. It's only for certain people. It's frivolous, yada, yada, yada. So a lot of folks have guilt and shame associated with things that are pleasurable. And I think that all of that, it just goes back to the noticing. If like that is your relationship to pleasure, that's fine. Start small, right?
Yeah.
Cut up a strawberry, slowly eat it, feel, smell, taste the whole experience, and just say to yourself, this is pleasure. Okay. And if that's like all that you can experience without having like guilt and shame, that's where you start from, right? Like back to some of the things that as a child brought you a lot of joy that, you know, you have some positive associations with, and engage with play or coloring or creative practices. And as you're doing them, go, ah, this is pleasure. I have a friend, I'm obsessed with the Korean spas in
Same. The clay ball saunas my life.
This like is one of the most amazing.
We'll have to go to one soon.
Yes, please. But you know, the signature service at a Korean spa is having all your skin scrubbed off. It can be a kind of intense experience.
I love it.
I love it too. But I have a friend.
What does that say about us? I wonder.
Who has really sensitive skin. Like she loves the feeling afterwards, but like it was like, it always is like super painful for her.
Yeah.
And she just tried this thing when she was getting a scrub. This is pleasure. And just like trying to like take long, deep breaths. This is pleasure. I'm doing this. This is a thing I'm doing for myself. And she actually over time has kind of reoriented towards the experience and now gets to actually enjoy the process and not just the aftermath of like her soft glowing skin. Yeah. And it's like, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the brain being like a big part of all of this.
Yeah. Like, it creates new neural pathways when we're in pleasure.
100%.
And just to clarify, make sure you're doing that around things that you want to enjoy, not things like abuse and other stuff where you're like, I like this. I guess I like this. I like this.
Just to clarify. Yes.
In case that needed to be clarified. But I also want to normalize people who don't experience pleasure from touch stuff, right? There are some people, whether it be due to neurodiversity, on the autism spectrum, you know, people who are highly sensitive that just don't get pleasure from a lot of touch or a lot of things touching their body, or especially, you know, for a lot of folks who are neurospicy, a lot of them don't like certain textures or they may not like bodily fluids. And so that can make sex and touch not feel pleasurable. And so really inviting people and the person who asked their question to expand their definition of sex and pleasure, like we're talking about, because it may not be even touch related at all. It may be fantasy. It may be energy. It may be spirituality. Like there doesn't have to be touch involved.
Yeah. Gazing at a beautiful view, viewing art on your own or with a partner. These are all things that fall into this pleasure category.
Yeah.
I think that that's another piece of it too, where pleasure, and this kind of goes into the censorship. Like we've had to kind of use pleasure as a euphemism for sex. And also it's like sort of a dirty word in our puritanical society. And so pleasure has been conflated
with
sexual pleasure. Sometimes just breaking out of that mold and having a more expansive relationship to it is the thing that gets you to a place where you can experience it without the guilt or the shame or the negative feelings, or like you're speaking to, actually finding your authentic relationship with it rather than like, oh, my partner likes this thing, therefore I should like it too.
Right.
Or I'm told I'm supposed to enjoy sex, therefore I'm going to try to make myself. No, fuck that. Like, if you enjoy just like laying on a sofa, listening to loud music, and that's what's pleasurable to you, cool. Do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Last question before we start to wrap up. What's the most either slutty or creative way that you've seen somebody use the magic wand?
Oh gosh. I mean, you know, it's so like,
I've got one that comes to mind.
I can't wait to hear yours, because I think mine is not maybe the most creative or the most slutty, but I was
most pleasurable.
I was exposed to a porn at a really formative moment in my like sexual development, which was someone using the magic wand without touching any other part of their body to squirt, and doing this thing of just like almost using it like a, you know, like a gear shift, like just like pulling it back on their body and then spraying the wall. And it was like a home video.
Whoa.
And I just remember having this experience of like, wow.
I love that it's full circle. You had this like formative defining moment and now you're working with them. So you've made it. You've made it, girl.
I have.
You're like, yeah, that's why I'm working there.
So what's your, what is your creative slutty?
I mean, there's so many. So I invite people to find one, send us about it. But one that I'm thinking of, I was at a sexy party one time and somebody had brought like a VR setup, for like virtual reality erotica. And so they also put a magic wand through like a hole that you could stand up against while you were watching the VR. Uh-huh. They had like condoms and things to make sure you know, each person covered and cleaned and all of that. But so basically you could kind of control like rubbing up against it or humping it or staying against it while you were in this point of view virtual reality experience in this public space, which was really funny because you get to see someone having their like, you know, they can't see, they can't hear what's happening around them. So you get to see them sort of in their private moment, not really seeing what they're seeing or feeling what they're feeling, but like watching them. Very cool.
I love that. I feel like when I go to events where there's like really elaborate rope bondage happening.
Oh yeah, this is a magic one. Yeah.
Used a lot where you've got someone in, say, like a suspended tie.
Yep.
And they're at the point of being like fully restricted. And then there's like, they've like planned it perfectly where there's the insert for the magic wand. And then to just like watch someone in that moment of ecstasy of like, you know, not having any control over the wand and like just having to surrender, right? To those.
Yeah, that it's just on them and they can't move.
Washing over their whole body. I always like, I mean, I love that use of it. And I, it's whenever I've had the honor of witnessing it, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, totally. Witnessing, experiencing, would recommend. Yes. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining. How can people follow you, the podcast, Magic Wand, all of the things?
Yes, you can follow Magic Wand on Instagram. We are still kind of doing that Twitter thing, but you know, mixed feelings about that. Facebook at True Magic Wand. If you tag us with your fan art or, you know, creative reels, we do try to share them. So I encourage you to do that. And then I am mostly on the Fuck Yeah Pod Instagram and TikTok at Fuck Yeah Pod. You can follow me at Sarah Tom Tom Tom, but you're really just going to get like kid and gardening content. So I would encourage you.
We love that. You contain multitudes.
Fuck Yeah Pod. For any of the, you know, sexuality stuff.
Well, gardening is pleasurable.
Yes, very, very.
Thank you. And listeners, again, if you want to follow what I'm doing, please don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, follow newsletters, because, you know, social media may not always be there for us. But currently on Instagram at Sluts and Scholars. You can listen anywhere you get your podcasts or at slutsandscholars.com. And don't forget to check out those advertiser discounts and check out the Fuck Yeah Pod. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. This is wonderful.
Sluts and Scholars, a podcast for professionals who prioritize pleasure. Sluts and Scholars is a podcast produced by Sluts and Scholars Media, LLC. It is a shame-free educational podcast made for your entertainment and informational desires only. The podcast, any opinions we share, and any resources, including social media and emails from us, are not therapy, medical care, or professional advice, and do not create a patient-client relationship. None of the information, opinions, suggestions, resources, or exercises mentioned in this podcast should be used without clearance from your healthcare provider. All opinions, information, and ideas expressed by the guests are solely their own. If you need emergency mental health or medical help, please call 911 or 988 or go to your nearest emergency center. We hope you enjoy the show.